Welcome back. This question asks, is the Royal Barbados Police Force satisfied with the length of time it takes for cases to reach conclusion in the court? 17 years for a rape charge to be prosecuted.
We are not satisfied. Mm-hmm. Let me say we are not satisfied. But again, there's a lot of variables that impact on the prosecution of a case. First, they have the investigation, and the investigation must be completed. Then we have to give the accused enough time to understand the case, to understand what's happening. And then the court itself is not a court that sits with just one case every day. So therefore, there's a lot of variables. While we might not be satisfied with years, we understand that there will be adjournments, mm-hmm. and adjournments that might take a year. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the court points at the police and say the police have not having the files and this and that in order is one of the reasons. So it's a team effort. It takes the community, it takes the policymakers, the police, it takes everybody to kind of bait this kit, so to speak, get all the ingredients right, and we kind of get this whole thing together. And that's why I like these things. People call them talk shots, but I think that...
I think also, Mr. Moderator, that... from an organization perspective, we have started to look seriously at our efficiency models. Mm-hmm. And the efficiency model in terms of managing our day-to-day caseload. And one of the impediments at this point in time is that we are still heavily paper-driven. So we write everything, we cross-reference everything. So we have started to modernize. We have a modernization agenda that would incorporate some technology, some digital aspects of recording information. Mm-hmm. And that should ensure that matters that would not normally take two or three days to write because the officer is not got a writer's block, so to speak, will now be done at earliest. Now, the other thing that gets in the way of these is that I don't always have a witness, like, and again, I use you, a moderator, that I can find that can say to me, come to me at 2:00 and I will give you the statement. You go on the block to find a fella. By the time you get there, the fella is saying, man, I ain't ready for this thing yet. So you say, well, come back tomorrow. You come back tomorrow, he's not there. You come back the next day, he's not there. So therefore, he keeps you in that circle. He keeps you in a circle, and he might be a vital part of connecting the dots. So you can't forward a file without that. Otherwise, it might not necessarily be the best case to put before the court. So there are a number of variables, and we're working on the efficiency model to get as many out as possible.
Right. One of the things I like to have kind of like an objective look at these things is to have some quantifiable research. So we say, OK, we had X amount of delays in 2011. We improved that in 2017 by X amount. And at 2020, we are here. This is something, this monitoring evaluation across the board is something that I think that Barbados needs to take a lot more seriously, so that we can actually improve. And I want to take this opportunity to tip my hat off to you and your team on the certificate of character. That is something that has dogged you guys for some time. And we had lots of calls as Barbados moved towards more requiring the certificate of character if you just want to walk down the road. So I know that that would have put a lot of pressure on you guys. And in modernizing the way that you've done it, I've heard a lot of good compliments. Obviously, they're not the calls of compliments like they had the calls of complaints, because that's the type of society we are. But I want to take this opportunity to tip my hat to you and say good job on that.
I may use this opportunity to thank the Ministry of Innovation, Science and Technology, because they have been the leaders in terms of creating the culture of the new technology.
Excellent. See what happens when we work together, huh? Teamwork. They taught us it from Sesame Street till now, and now we see we reap the rewards of it. I want to ask one more question from our previous shows on this, and then we go back to telephone lines. The whole idea of morale has come up in the public arena, where you had promotions and people were not necessarily very happy, and it was said to affect the morale. We had what was deemed political interference with, and I know you may not want to touch that directly, but I'm putting it on the table nonetheless. And then this whole idea of low numbers, so not having the required numbers of number of officers, along with morale, how much is that affecting the good already good work that you're doing? It may put you at good, but not better or best.
No, you know, Corey, one of the things that we are learning organization, and definitely there will always be interventions that would cause us to think beyond the boss. But when you join the police force, you develop a passion for the job, a passion for service, a passion for making you or the members of the public as comfortable as possible. So therefore, you find that, yes, there will be issues that, you know, like any organization, you would have little challenges that would affect the way you view the internal aspects of the organization, but not necessarily affect the way you deliver your service. Mm-hmm. So yes, we can have that. Secondly, our numbers. I would sit here and I would say to you, 250 of any organization, whether you are an organization with 100 or organization with 2,000 or 2,500 people, that number itself will impact on how you plan, how you make decisions, how you apportion your strategies.
What is the ideal number of the force today? What's the ideal number?
The force carry weight of about 1,520 or thereabout.
1,500. That's the ideal number. How many?
1,520. That's the establishment. That's what we work with. If we had everybody, I think 1,528 is the number.
1,528. That's how much you have today.
No, today we have about 250 short.
Well, you're 250 short of the ideal number. Do you have any plans that you can share with us in terms of a recruitment and how to recruit some of these people? So instead of watching Badness, they will actually join the police force. Any
no, they should watch Badness. If you were telling you should say they should watch Badness to see how they can make Badness correct.
Correct. They watch Badness and admire the officers and they want to become police officers. So
yeah, that could be a plus for Badness.
Good. So any recruitment plans you have?
We do a lot of career showcase. We also involve as many like community drives to encourage people to come to the organization. We had in recent times promo on television that says to the man, there's no better way than to serve a country. So come and serve the country. So there are a number of ways that we do, and we live the example, we live the life of a police so that people will want to emulate and join us.
All right. If I may add, Mr. Moderator,
sure.
We have also been partnering with the Ministry of Youth and Community Empowerment, along with the Princess Trust International, in terms of hosting a number of employability workshops. Where in this partnership, the Ministry of Youth and Community Empowerment has engaged a number of young persons in the age group 16 to 30 who would meet the specific criteria to join the organization. And we've been taking a team of officers from various departments within the force who would have engaged those young persons in that two-day workshop. And the response has been overwhelming. Nice. So we've had a number of persons who have actually made applications to join the force. And once those numbers, the deficits have been fulfilled, I'm quite sure that our community policing will be stronger and other aspects of policing will increase significantly.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. 3 minutes afternoon. Let's go to the lines and take a number of calls here. 3 minutes afternoon. Good afternoon.
Hello. Hi. Good afternoon, Corey.
Hi. Good afternoon.
And good afternoon to your panel. All right. Only Friday gone, and this is just a run-up to what I want to say. Only Friday gone on the same very station here. Larry Mills, through his afternoon programs, was highlighting the good work of the police. And he made mention about a police that carried the uniform well, dressed well. He was the best dressed police person in the force, a man called Byron Clark. I don't know if any two gentlemen remember that guy. Hello? But I would say that Mr. Boyce, that you have on now, that you have on the program now, easily is one of the sharpest dressers in the force. But that aside, I want to move to my point, and I would like to get a little what the police is thinking. Only recently, the police put out, my word, a manhunt for people to join the force. And it appeared to me like the police was dropping their standard in terms of the height, in terms of the build, and in terms of the certificates. I just heard one of the representatives there talk about doing things the old-fashioned way, where you got to write for 2 days. I want to know how savvy our the force is in respect to computer literacy, because I think that, according to what the officer said just now, the personnel said just now, I thought that would be a spot of bother. Could I hold on and listen for a reply?
Sure.
Yes, we believe in professionalism, and we believe that we are the best recruiter.
This is Mr. Boyce. Mr. Boyce.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we believe that we are by the life we live, by the example we set, by the way we conduct ourselves, by our image, we are the pull factor to the force. So we tend to put a mirror at the door so that whenever police leave, he knows what he looks like and what the people are going to see. So based on that, we would think that would be a pull factor to the youngsters out there.
Secondly, this whole question about lowering the bar for people to get numbers in the force, could you speak to that?
I didn't hear that clearly.
Lowering the bar in terms of the amount of certificates CSCs that you must, at least that used to be, to join the force. Sometime recently, less than a year ago, they appear to the general public that was not the amount of certificates was not no more a requirement, and the height and size and all of that been also be rearranged.
If I may answer that, there is what we call within the force special constabulary. Uh-huh. That constabulary, the entry level for that constabulary is fairly, in my inverted commas, ordinary, in that you don't have to have 3 CSCs to get into that constabulary. But when we come to the force, there's a level of qualifying entry that is maintained as far as education is concerned. From a strategic perspective, we have sat and we discussed whether or not education is in context of policing can give us the belly of the organization as distinct from training. So can we take a person who has very little qualification and training into understanding what is professionalism, what is policing, and allow him to develop that core, that aspect of the policing?
In other words, learning on a job.
I didn't hear that either.
He says it's like learning on the job.
Yeah, because that's about it. You can come to the police and you can have English language, you can have home economics, you can have technical drawing, you can have social science. While these demonstrate to us that you can assimilate information, you can work with this, or you can understand this, you have the basic understanding. There are elements within police that are unique to police that require that level of training to understand what it is to do, to deliver a police service, what it is to do an investigation, what it is to give evidence in court, what it is to crowd control. All that is critical in terms of understanding the training that is required by the police officer. Education is fine. So yes, we need education, because in Barbados, nobody should be saying, I don't have education, because the education is available to everybody. You cannot have an organization that is willing always to take people from that level of thought process and not take into wider context that education is there and people must, from an early age, get involved in the education process.
Understood. One final thing, Ineo, and thanks for your answers, really. But this one thing, and you're not bound to answer if it can touch on security, on the security part of this force. How strong are your IT department, and if your force is IT or computer literate? But like I said, you don't have to go into any detail.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, caller. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if I may answer that, because earlier we talked about the efficiency model of the force, and we recognize that efficiency can be improved by technology. We are in the process of modernization, and the agenda for modernization has a platform for IT, computer savviness, the digital way of doing things. So we are actually in that phase of our repurposing or renewal in terms of getting our officers. No longer can an officer just come and say, well, I can read writing and write reading. We want him now to say that I can use a computer, I know how to use a cell phone, I know how to use a computer as a prerequisite for coming into the organization. So yes, we are a bit lagging in terms of our IT capacity, but at the same time, we are conscious of the fact that they need to accelerate that modernization process so that we would have more access to information decision making and to dealing with people's complaints in a quick manner.
Okay, thank you. Let's take another call. Good afternoon and welcome. Good afternoon, you're on the air?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Right. My question is, what is the role of a constable and the powers they have to help combat crime?
Good question. Thank you. That's one from before, too. Thank you. Island constables, what are their roles and how can they help in combating crime?
Island constables or parish constables were constables that were considered from a voluntary perspective years ago. I mean, if you go back to the plantation days, you will see that you need as many eyes as possible. And one of the ways of getting those eyes was to give some authority to people, island constables. And I think we are right when we say, well, I only have two eyes as a police officer, even though I might have bifocals or whatever. So the more eyes I have out there, the better it is for the safety of the community. So the role of the IC is to create that kind of relationship with community, with the segment of operations that they are involved in, and to work with us on those areas. Because of the consistent demands of police, you'll find that we need to have them on beaches. We need to have them at events, at big events. So there is definitely a role for them as it relates to making sure that there is a first line, a first layer of security, a first layer that allow us, the police officer, to get involved in other things that are are critical to the safety of the country.
Okay, thank you. Good, good. I think you answered that part as well, because a lot of people say they use the wrong tourist attractions and so on and stuff. So that will fall under the increasing role for them. Let's take another call. Brass, that's good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes, Corey. Morning.
Morning.
To the panel as well. I wanted to inquire. There's a general perception where the police is perceived, particularly that quotient that you identified, 16 to 25, and generally there is a us and them, that's Babylon, that's, the beast. And, some not nice terms are used in to describe the police. I'm startled, really, by how that perception is based on how, people relate to the police. They see them as the enemy, right? And so to that extent, there is a barrier. And I hear of the community policing. I hear of the involvement in some of the social service agencies by the police in terms of the kind of breaking through and allowing them to be more accessible and seen as servants as opposed to enforcers. So I'm wondering how you can up your public relations aspect so that they be more readily acceptance. And secondly, you made reference to the fact that your Princess Trust program, you engage one of you had a young man who was on probation and you engaged him, and the probation department seemed to be very impressive how you got them to turn around. I want to suggest that in previous years, probation was an agency that was more actively engaged in doing that same work that the Princess Trust is doing. And in some other jurisdictions, a decision was made to fit the department purposefully, and there was a deliberate strategy to place more men into the department. My understanding is that there are 3 male officers in the department, and 3 male officers, where 90% of the clientele is young men who need mentorship, who need. So I think there must be a rebalance, and so that you can work more readily and a better fit. There are a lot of male social workers like Corey and Mr. Cobbler. I know he did program, but that need to be in engaged in that department. So that's just something for the authorities to consider.
All right. Thank you very much. Any response, or could we move along?
Yeah, I thought the caller made an excellent point when he tried to make the distinction between servant and enforcers. But I would want to caution and say that one of the planks or a central plank of policing is enforcing, making sure people are disciplined, making sure people do what the law requires, making sure people are able to enjoy the freedoms as defined by the Constitution, assembly, speech, and everything. So we recognize the us and we, and the us and them, and that is why our community trust has been so in your face, so out there over the years. As a philosophy, it is. And as a strategy, we engage it. Now, one of the things I learned sitting in police leadership is that prioritization and demands and expectations are critical vocabs, words in the vocabulary. The caller made mention of, extending the juvenile and the youth crime section. But when you say on a day-to-day basis, and Corey, the policing is complex, is exciting, it provides a lot of avenue for thought process. But when you say on a day-to-day basis and you plan an agenda, and you hear, yes, there's a flood in St. Lucie, somebody missing. then you have to look for resources to get there. You hear there's an event that is illegal, then you have to look for resources. You have somebody who is saying, well, the noise is so excruciating. You have to look for a resource to put there. Then you hear, my house has been broken. So there's a lot of competing demands on the resources of the force. So prioritization is critical. And yes, we want to create the strategic path that we would say, well, okay, if we focus a lot on youth friends, if we focus a lot on changing behavior, then we would be in a better position. Then we'll be in a better position to understand what would happen 3, 4, 5 years down the road. So yes, as police leaders, we say and we try to create the strategic direction, we try to create the priorities, we try to look at the demands, and we try to measure the expectations with what we are expected by our mandate to deliver. We are expected to deliver safe societies. We are expected to deliver secure society, peace and tranquility. So therefore, we have to look at that from the plate, from the entire plate, and again, apportion the resources to suit. And sometimes, again, because when an organization is 250 short, that's a lot of resources. So sometimes we have to manipulate the process in order to satisfy a particular emerging demand. So yes, we are conscious of that. And as I say, as a police leader, we say and antagonize over what is tomorrow's demand and how can we deal with it today so that it would not be a demand tomorrow.
And if I may add, Corey, based on what our caller would have said, in terms of the probation department doing a lot of work in terms of working with young people. And I would say at this point that our juvenile liaison department scheme also works significantly with young people. And as it relates to the amendment to the Child Justice Bill, which is being proposed to come on stream quick shortly, you know, all the critical stakeholders who are working with young people will be part of this committee. We will then sit down together as a team of practitioners who will look at all the presenting factors and design programs collaboratively to address some youth crime in this country.
Well said. I think one of the most powerful things we've said thus far I've highlighted, because I think that's the real purpose and the gem of having you guys here, is when you can say from the horse's mouth to the public, listen, there are a lot of competing priorities. Because when somebody picks up the phone and they call the Royal Barbados Police Force, there's only one issue they are concerned about. And sometimes they may not actively think of the fact that, yes, there is a flood in the north, a robbery in the south, a thing in the west and north. And they're just thinking, I want the police and I want the police now. And I think it's very important for you, being in police leadership, to say, listen, we want to get everywhere, but there are priorities and resource challenges. One of the things I've seen an increase in is the use of partnership with the Barbados Defense Force. A lot of people are of the impression that the police force and the BDF can work well together. There are a lot of persons there in the BDF. There aren't any impending wars that we know about. We don't have to fly to the U.S. to help them to transition peacefully. So we can use some of the guys and girls up there to assist with the police. Is this something that we can see more of to help fill that 250 void that you're having?
I would suggest that police is police and soldier is soldier.
That sounds like a no.
And the two of them coming together can do wonderful things. But for me, let us understand that policing requires a civil approach to things and soldier requires a might approach. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if it is not blended correctly, then you can create problems at a wider scale. So where we can use them, we will use them. Where the Governor General sees fit that there is need for that level of assistance, we can get that level of assistance.
I love that answer. That's all I will say. This one says, Corey, please answer this question for me. The police are complaining about shortage of manpower. I do believe it is how you use your resources. Question, does it make sense to have three police officers hiding in the bush to see when someone jump a stop sign?